the headlines, British media report that Prime Minister Boris Johnson is stepping down after facing a mounting rebellion within his party. A senior Hamas leader says his meeting with the Palestinian president in Algeria opened a new chapter in the Palestinian fight for freedom. And also on our headlines, the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps intelligence unit says a number of foreign diplomats were committing acts of espionage under diplomatic cover. Hello and welcome, everybody. British media say that Prime Minister Boris Johnson is preparing to announce his resignation in the coming hours. Johnson has been desperately struggling to hang on to power after a series of resignations in his cabinet. Several resigning ministers have said that they could no longer tolerate Johnson's culture of scandals. The government's performance has been under pressure from Conservative Party members calling on Johnson to step down. Johnson has been defiant, but number 10 now says the Premier will come up with a resignation statement in the next few hours. Well, to look further deeper into the situation in British politics, we're now joined by our correspondent, Robert Carter, who's with us from British capital London. And we also have former UK Member of Parliament, Lembit Opik, who's also joining us from the British capital. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Robert. Robert, is this announcement really that big of a surprise right now?
Well, I think after the two key resignations from the Chancellor and also from Rishi Sunak as well, which took place on Tuesday, I believe it was, there weren't many pundits that were speculating that this is it. This is going to be the major revolt, which is looking to finally get Boris Johnson out of number 10. I think some may have suspected that because Boris Johnson had clearly made intentions to cling on to power with everything that he had, he wasn't going to graciously pass it over to his to the successor. He was going to literally fight tooth and nail to keep himself in the premiership. That some people thought that maybe he was going to pull another magic act out of the hat and basically managed to cling on for a little bit longer. But no, that's clearly not the case. I think the avalanche of resignations which occurred over the past 12 hours is really what finally did it for the Prime Minister. You know, he did try to fill those gaps initially, but unfortunately with so many resignations happening at the same time, he reached a position where he basically couldn't fill in key government positions, and it just made it, it just reached a point where it's just untenable for Boris Johnson to even consider going on any further. But even then, there is still a debate happening inside the party, a lot of controversy surrounding the idea that he may cling on as an interim prime minister until autumn of this year. Many people want him to be gone now. They literally don't want him at all, even for another day. But still, Boris Johnson appears to be fighting just to hold on a little bit longer, because if he was to go now, that means he would have reigned for a shorter term than his nemesis, if you like, Theresa May, who I think held on to power for at least an extra 28, 30 days or so. If Boris Johnson was to leave now, he'd be 28 days short. So he might want to stay until autumn just for that reason alone, to feed what's left of his ego in order to make sure that he stayed in power longer than his nemesis. So that's the debate going forward. Will the Prime Minister announce in his speech that he's going now, which a lot of people want, especially the opposition, or will he stay on until autumn? That's the big question now.
Right. Let's cross over to Mr. Opik now. Numerous prime ministers have been dumped by office by sudden and deadly rebellions within their own parties. What, in your opinion, made this happen to Johnson?
The same thing that happened to the Titanic. There was no one particular litre of water that sank the ship. But at one point, the designer said the sinking is now a statistical certainty. That actually happened in February. I said here on Press TV that Boris Johnson would not survive this year. In fact, I was rather optimistic in one sense. I thought he'd be out by April, but I'd underestimated how weak the official opposition and Keir Starmer were. So the direct answer to your question It's a series of very bad judgments by Boris Johnson, but they're judgments in the past. He couldn't change the lies he'd told. He couldn't change the parties he went to. He couldn't change the appointments he made. And if you've lied in British politics, up to a point, people tolerate it. They expect it happens to an extent. But Boris Johnson had damaged his own party, the Conservative Party's reputation so much that this great electoral machine called the Conservatives decided he was a liability. One more point about this. Remember that Boris Johnson was elected to leader because they thought he could win elections, and he did. He won lots of seats, which no other prime minister could have done for the Tories. But now he's costing them votes. That's why the by-elections were lost. That's why they're doing quite badly in the polls. And that's why at least 80 Conservative politicians think we have to get rid of Boris Johnson because we'll otherwise lose our seats. So, yes, it was unavoidable that he was going to have to leave. It's a question of when. But also, as you've just heard, they've got a problem. He's going to stay as long as he can. And that's till autumn. And the damage continues because Boris Johnson's band is hopelessly damaged. And as long as he's in charge, so are the Conservatives.
And that's the question, Mr. Opik. Is it sustainable for him to carry on until autumn?
Yes, it is. And that's because the mechanisms to get him to go earlier are even more difficult than the mechanisms to get him to resign in the first place. What do I mean by that? There is no legal way to get Boris Johnson to leave his job sooner. And there's no constitutional way to do it because we have not got a constitution. There's a third practical reason why he will probably have till autumn. All of the leadership candidates want that time to get their campaigns going. I'm going to a meeting tonight of Jeremy Hunt, one of the candidates. He hasn't said so officially, but I'm sure he's going to launch his campaign. It takes about 3 months to run a really good leadership campaign. So they want it. Boris Johnson wants it. And even if his Conservative backbenchers don't want it, it's too bad. They're going to have to live with the pain for a few months longer. And sadly, so will the country.
Robert Carter, who's most likely to be the next Prime Minister, and what challenges will he or she have ahead?
That's a very good question, but it's impossible to answer it, quite frankly. There's many, many potential candidates that are going to run. And I think that, you know, the Conservative Party have become a kind of party of personalities. So there's a lot of individuals who I think have an eye on that leadership position and have done for some time. Probably nearly the entire front bench under Boris Johnson all have an eye on the leadership at some point. Whether they'll run now or in the future, we'll have to wait and see. But it's very, very difficult to tell. And I think, as has been the case with other leadership battles, it will probably swing in a direction that we don't necessarily expect. But yeah, everyone from Jeremy Hunt, Rishi Sunak, Sajid Javid, Michael Gove has been long expected to have an eye on the leadership position. Priti Patel as well. She's considered quite ruthless in her ambitions to rise up the ladder. So again, it could literally be a huge number of candidates, and it could literally fall anywhere. We're not quite sure. In terms of the challenges they're going to have, I mean, the economy is in a very bad situation. There's also foreign policy issues such as the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. So there are many, many issues, and basically all of the problems that have plagued Boris Johnson's premiership are now going to be passed on to the successor, and they're going to have to figure out a way to fix all of the damage that he's done, not just economically and policy-wise, but the reputation of the Conservative Party as basically being a party of sleaze has to be fixed. So it's going to be a massive, mighty challenge for anyone who takes over.
Mr. Opik, Johnson secured a landslide election win and then enacted Brexit. What is his legacy now, and how has the UK changed after Brexit?
His legacy is helping to win the Brexit debate, but he'll be remembered for something else. Two things, in fact. One, as Robert said, this encyclopedia of failure when it comes to integrity, bad decision-making about process, being accused of misleading the House. That will be one of the two big things. Let's just call that Partygate. And the other thing he will be perhaps forgotten for is the total absence of any policy development. The one thing that he brought to the Conservatives was a green agenda. the idea that we need to go to net zero. But as I've said on Press TV before, that's a catastrophically stupid policy. And it's a direct consequence of trying to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels that's led to the cost of living crisis. So from a policy point of view, he's done really badly. And I think that historians will note that. The public will forget it. But in 5 years' time, if we talk about Boris Johnson's leadership, I'm not sure if Robert would agree, the one word people will remember is Partygate.
And staying with you, how can Johnson's departure impact UK foreign policy?
That's a really interesting question, which I've been considering this morning. The short answer is probably very little change, certainly nothing before he physically leaves the office. I think that the UK is obligated to carry on supporting Zelensky in Ukraine and the conflict there. What's more interesting is whether we're going to have a more mature relationship between Iran and some other Middle Eastern countries in the United Kingdom. A sensible prime minister would finish the nuclear deal that was started and then stopped by Donald Trump. A sensible British prime minister in the post-Brexit environment will know that this country needs all the allies it can get. And Iran would be a very powerful ally because it is, of course, the regional superpower in that part of the world. I would love to see it. One of the big questions that I'll be asking and others will be asking is, can you now grow up and finish what you started instead of playing virtue signaling politics, which doesn't help the Middle East, doesn't help the UK, doesn't help the world?
All right, thanks a lot, Robert Carter. Joining us from London, and thanks to former UK Member of Parliament Lambert Opic, also speaking to us from the British capital. Moving on, senior Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh says his meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has ushered in a new chapter in the Palestinian struggle against the Israeli regime. Head of the Hamas Political Bureau noted that he did not hesitate to respond positively to Algeria's invitation for him to sit down with the Palestinian president. He told President of the Algerian National Assembly Salah Gujil that Palestinians were very welcoming of his meeting with Abbas, hoping it would boost unity. He said the liberation of Palestine will only materialize through resistance and unity. Gujil also noted that the issue of Palestine is key for Algeria and that Algiers supports the Palestinian people's right to establish an independent state, which will have Quds as its capital. The Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has identified former diplomats and nationals committing acts of espionage in Iran. They include a British and an Austrian diplomat, as well as a Polish national. Footage released by the IRGC shows that they were spotted taking soil samples in restricted areas. One of them is Giles Whittaker, the UK deputy ambassador to Tehran. Whittaker and his family visited the central Shahdad desert as tourists, during which he was spotted collecting soil samples. Whittaker was also engaged in shooting photographs in a forbidden area. The illegal acts happened just as the IRGC aerospace forces were conducting missile exercises in the vicinity. Whittaker was asked to leave the area after apologizing for his conduct. Also among those identified is the husband of Austria's cultural attaché to Iran and a Polish university professor. They were both caught on camera collecting samples. Well, Iran is hosting the first edition of Tehran Investment Summit. The business event seeks to acquaint Iranian and foreign business people with investment opportunities in the Iranian capital. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Tehran, the capital of Iran, and now a destination for investors. Tehran Investment Summit brought together businesses, mayors, and urban development officials from Iran and the world to explore areas of investment in Tehran.
It's so important for us to participate in here, and we consider as a not only for a relationship between two cities, it's in the, including for the relationship between two countries.
2 years ago, the Iranian and Nicaraguan capitals, Tehran and Managua, signed an MOU that named them as sister cities. Now, with the Tehran Investment Summit, there is a chance for Managua to further cooperate with Tehran in launching urban development projects.
210 projects covering waste management, transport, and tourism, among others, will be introduced to investors in the two-day conference. The projects total roughly $71 billion. Tehran municipality says if those projects are accomplished, they will revolutionize the Iranian capital.
This is the start of a turning point in Tehran's development. This conference was inaugurated today, but it has no closing ceremony. The exhibition section of the event will continue to run permanently to highlight any area that needs investment. This will transform Tehran's future.
Being among the busiest cities means that Tehran is inevitably among the most polluted places in the world. Municipal authorities say they also welcome any investment in controlling air pollution in Tehran.
Eliminating air pollution and traffic congestions are among the major challenges in Tehran, which can be solved permanently through the promotion of clean transportation. I'm certain that many investors would love to invest in this area.
Attracting foreign investment has long been a challenge for Iran as a result of U.S. sanctions that restrict global banking transactions with Iran.
I would not say that sanctions will not affect foreign investment, but we are focusing on the private sector, which acts separately from governments. Meanwhile, the Central Bank of Iran has also promised to support foreign investors should they take part in Tehran's development projects.
Life in the Iranian capital is a mixed experience of modernity and antiquity, as it's home to both skyscrapers and historic buildings, together making it a hot tourist target. But tourism is only one of the countless capacities for investment in Tehran, as it's home to some 15 million residents, and with a large population comes a wide array of interests and businesses. As the capital of Iran, Tehran has numerous opportunities for investors, from tourism to transport and pollution control projects. Many of those projects have so far been running based on citizen participation or tax revenues. Now, Tehran municipality says with its approach shifting toward investment, the development of the metropolis is expected to accelerate. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. In Britain, the resignations of Rishi Sunak and Sajid Javid, both considered potential future UK leadership contenders, came at a critical moment for Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Elections to the 1922 committee executive in coming days are expected to strengthen the hand of rebels, hoping to call another vote of no confidence in Johnson's government. We now present you an article written jointly by Heather Stewart, Rowena Mason and Jessica Elgott. The piece is titled Sajid Javid and Rishi Sunak Quit, Throwing Boris Johnson's Future into Doubt. Please stay with us for more. In Britain, Boris Johnson's premiership was on the brink of collapse after the Chancellor Rishi Sunak and the Health Secretary Sajid Javid and a string of Conservative aides dramatically quit, dealing a crushing blow to his authority after a slew of self-inflicted scandals. Publishing damning resignation letters within minutes of each other, Rishi Sunak and Sajid Javid pointed to a lack of grip in Downing Street. The Prime Minister attempted to recover his authority by swiftly appointing Nadhem Zahawi as his Chancellor and Steve Barclay as the Health Secretary. But the credibility of the move was undermined as reports emerged that Zahawi had threatened to quit unless he got the job instead of Foreign Secretary Liz Truss during a power struggle in No. 10. The resignations of Javid and Sunak, both considered potential future leadership contenders, came at a moment of significant danger for Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Elections up to the 1922 committee executive in the coming days are expected to strengthen the hands of rebels who hope to call another vote of no confidence. There is growing expectation among MPs that there will be moves to change the rules to allow a second confidence vote before the summer recess begins on 21st of July, a feat previously seen as administratively impossible. In his resignation letter, the Chancellor Rishi Sunak said the public expected government to be conducted properly, competently and seriously. The Health Secretary Sajid Javid wrote in his resignation letter, "We may not have always been popular, but we have been competent in acting in the national interest. Sadly, in the current circumstances, the public are concluding that we are now neither." He added, "The recent vote of confidence showed that a large number of our colleagues agree. It was a moment for humility, grip, and new direction. However, I regret to say that it is clear to me that this situation will not change under your leadership, and you have therefore lost my confidence too." Rishi Sunak highlighted differences of opinion over economic management between him and Boris Johnson in the run-up to a joint speech the pair had planned next days. It will increase speculation that he has not given up on a run at the premiership. Sunak and Javid resignations were followed by several more junior Tories quitting, including Alex Chalk as Solicitor General, who said he could no longer defend the culture and course set on Boris Johnson's watch. Jonathan Gullis, a former ultra-loyalist, stepped down as a Parliamentary Private Secretary, while Bim Afolami quit as Vice Chair of the party. Jonathan Gullis said, "I feel for too long we have been more focused on dealing with our reputational damage rather than delivering for the people of this country and spreading opportunity for all. It is for this reason that I can no longer serve as part of your government." Former Brexit Minister Lord Frost urged Boris Johnson to resign, warning in the Telegraph, "If he hangs on, he risks taking the party and the government down with him." He said other cabinet ministers now needed to consider whether they are truly happy with the current direction of travel. Lord Frost wrote of the Chris Pincher scandal, "Confronted with a problem which appeared to reflect badly on the Prime Minister's judgment, we saw once again the instinct was to cover up, to conceal, to avoid confronting the reality of the situation." Theo Clark, former trade envoy to Kenya and member of the Women and Equality Select Committee, said, "To learn that Johnson chose to elevate a colleague to a position of pastoral care for MPs, whilst in full knowledge of his own wrongdoing, shows a severe lack of judgment and care for your parliamentary party." Andrew Morrison, a former trade envoy to Morocco, strongly urged Boris Johnson to go, saying, "He cannot square Johnson's patronage with my personal sense of decency and honour." Sagar Bharti, former parliamentary private secretary to the health secretary, said, "My conscience will not allow me to continue to support this administration." Tuesday's walkouts followed an extraordinary intervention over the Chris Pincher scandal. On Tuesday morning, former Foreign Office Permanent Secretary Simon MacDonald made clear in an excoriating letter that Johnson had been briefed about an investigation into Chris Pincher, a former Deputy Chief Whip in 2019. That contradicted statements from Downing Street that Boris Johnson did not know about specific claims against Pincher before he quit last week amid charges of inappropriate affairs. During a febrile day in Westminster, MPs in the House of Commons were told Boris Johnson did not immediately recall that he had been informed about an investigation into Chris Pincher. The Prime Minister later conceded it had been a mistake to appoint Pincher as Deputy Chief Whip, a role that involves pastoral care of MPs. Boris Johnson said, "What I wanted was to give Chris Pincher, if not the benefit of the doubt, then the ability to prove that he could do better. And I'm afraid that he couldn't. And I feel very, very bitterly disappointed and also sorry for the mistake that I made." Throughout the day, a growing number of Conservative MPs, including some who had previously been supportive, said this latest incident had been the last straw. Andrew Morrison, a former Conservative minister, resigned as a trade envoy, saying, "Others must square, as best they can, their continuing enjoyment of your patronage with their personal sense of decency, honour and integrity, but I no longer can. In February, reflecting on your achievements, I wrote a supportive opinion editorial for The Guardian in which I said that if you were obliged to leave office, you would do so with your head held high. I would no longer write in those terms." Rishi Sunak published his resignation letter just minutes after Sajid Javid, saying, "I'm sad to be leaving government, but I have reluctantly come to the conclusion we cannot continue like this." He added, "The public rightly expected government to be conducted properly, competently and seriously. I recognise this may be my last ministerial job, but I believe these standards are worth fighting for, and that is why I'm resigning." Bim Afolami said, "I think what's been very sad over the recent charges about the former Deputy Chief Whip and other things that have happened over the last few weeks is that I just don't think the Prime Minister has any longer not just my support, but I don't think the support of the party, or indeed the country, anymore. I think for that reason he should step down." Boris Johnson had earlier toured the House of Commons tea room hoping to shore up support among his backbenchers. But one MP said his message about the Pincher scandal had been "everyone deserves a second chance," a sentiment that did not go down well with some present. As well as his new roles for Zahawi and Barclay, Boris Johnson appointed the Universities Minister Michelle Donnellan as Education Secretary to replace Zahawi. Sources close to other cabinet ministers, including Liz Truss, Ben Wallace, Dominic Raab and Priti Patel, said they would remain in post, but rumours of more junior resignations continued to sweep through Westminster. The leader of the Labour Party, Keir Starmer, said, "If the ministers had a shred of integrity, they would have gone months ago. The British public will not be fooled. The Tory party is corrupted, and changing one man won't fix that. Only a real change of government can give Britain a fresh start that it needs.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Might as well be called a political bloodbath. More than 30 ministers have quit Prime Minister Boris Johnson's government. Yet the British Prime Minister rejects calls by the Labour opposition, for example, to call a snap general election. But why are his ministers quitting en masse? Why did they lose such faith in his leadership? Were too many scandals just too much to bear? Or do they believe that Johnson is just not fit to run a country which is going through an economic crisis? Just a few of the questions we'll be asking in this edition of The Spotlight.
What was meant to be a routine weekly gathering of cabinet ministers morphed into something very different. Double mortal blows to the Prime Minister Boris Johnson as his Health Secretary Sajid Javid and Chancellor Rishi Sunak quit their jobs within minutes of each other, handing in resignation letters that make for extraordinary reading. The vote of confidence last month, Sajid Javid wrote, was a moment for humility, grip, and new direction. I regret to say, however, that it is clear to me that the situation will not change under your leadership, and you have therefore lost my confidence too. The Chancellor also took aim at the PM's character. The public, he wrote, rightly expect government to be conducted properly, competently, and seriously.
Nothing's worse for a party than a loss of faith in the character of their leader. And these senior politicians, and let's recognise over a dozen of them have now resigned, are saying it's either Boris Johnson or us. Since Boris Johnson isn't going, they are. They're going to have to sit it out, like Boris, but there can only be one winner, and it won't be the Prime Minister.
Boris Johnson's is a government embroiled in sleaze and scandal for months, from lockdown rules-breaching parties under his roof to porn-watching MP. The latest controversy emerged over this man, Chris Pincher, forced to resign from government over accusations of sexual harassment. But the last straw was when it turned out that despite Number 10's denials, the Prime Minister knew of a past formal complaint against Pincher all along he appointed him to his cabinet.
I apologise for it. I think in hindsight it was the wrong thing to do. I apologise to everybody who's been badly affected by it.
But that didn't wash with the now former Chancellor and Health Secretary or the dozens of MPs who have already resigned. More defections could be on the way.
There's no doubt that we will see more resignations, with quite a few cabinet ministers not declaring one way or the other. But the realpolitik here is he's lost the confidence of his party. He's lost the confidence of a very large number of people whom he himself appointed, and the public aren't taking him seriously. I like Boris as a friend. I think he's a decent man. But the one thing he doesn't seem to have is good judgment about when to leave.
Whether or not Boris Johnson can survive politically is a question debated by his friends and foes for months. The question now is whether these recent resignations will be the beginning of the end for a prime minister whose leadership is in freefall and as the specter of a new no-confidence vote looms large. Saipur is up, London.
Well, let me first introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Trevor Busby joins us. He's an economic analyst who joins us from London. Also joining us is Mick Napier, activist and commentator who joins us from Edinburgh. Welcome to you both.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let me first start with you, Shabir Rezvi, if I may. We're looking at the reasons behind these mass resignations that have taken place, of rocking the government of Prime Minister Boris Johnson. And of course, as you're well aware, it's the Pincher affair, this Chris Pincher, the deputy chief whip who resigned last week. Do you buy the fact that that is the only reason that you're seeing all these resignations?
Hello, good evening. I'm sitting not very far from the parliament at this moment, about 20 minutes away. And really, it's an extraordinary situation that's unfolding here in the last 24 hours. I think really, one's got to look at it in context. It's not that what happened with the Deputy Chief Whip, Mr. Pincher, or the sort of catalogue of... Mr. Johnson has been well known to have very little affinity with truth. Historically, when he was the mayor of London or throughout his premiership or prior to it, when he sold the lie of Brexit. One of the MPs recently described in the last 24 hours that they are demoralized, distraught and disturbed, distressed. I would say that the government has been dodgy, disgraceful and really disreputable. It's that, you know, the two ministers resigning, and over the last 24 hours, we've had about 38 ministers and sort of ministers or secretaries of state who have resigned. Not only that, what's fascinating is that his newly appointed chancellor, Nadeem Zahawi, is also lobbying for the prime minister to resign. It's really quite disgraceful. You know, the whole politics in UK, I think we did a commentary about 4 or 5 months ago where I said that the Conservative Party is a winning machine. They really don't care who the leader is, so long as they are in a position to win. So I think the MPs are now realizing, the Conservative MPs are very clearly realizing that to have Boris Johnson as Prime Minister is probably more dangerous for their own well-being as members of parliament. So they're abandoning ship at this moment, and also the former ministers are also looking whether they can also become prime ministers when Johnson goes. I mean, there's a great metaphor in English which says a fish rots from the head down. So obviously it has been rotting for the last 2.5 years, if you like, since Boris Johnson became the prime minister, and it is very clearly becoming that the fish is smelling terribly now, and they have to either get rid of that fish or do something else altogether. And this is where the whole situation arises. As you said in your opening comments, that we've got a crisis taking place where ordinary families are suffering in UK. Nearly 4 to 5 million people go to food banks, and you know, fuel prices up, energy prices up, and the reality is that these shenanigans taking place at Westminster do not impact the people when they're suffering economic pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mick Napier, it's really turning out to be a soap opera here, if you really take a look at it in some sense, which is not funny, really. But when you have a chancellor that Johnson elects, and then that chancellor turns on turns against Johnson. What are we looking at here? Are we looking, I mean, there's got to be something, a bigger picture here that maybe we're not catching on to in terms of the revolt that's taking place, especially when you have a new chancellor that then turns on the PM. How do you assess the situation?
Well, you're absolutely right. It's a soap opera, but if somebody had written the script for a soap opera, it would have been rejected by the director as far, far too improbable. A couple of hours ago, there were 20 ministers and junior ministers who had resigned from the government. Now I think it's just one or two under 40. It's 38 or 39 now. So this is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this in British politics. I think we need to look at the surface and then look a little bit beneath the surface. I mean, at one level, most of the crisis can be inflicted. That is, an intelligent and a different kind of leader could have avoided them. You know, the promotion of a sex pest, really, what can I say, shocking and horrifying millions of British people who had been unable to say goodbye to their loved ones when they were dying during lockdown because the lockdown was extremely strict. And during this time, Johnson and his friends were ordering people on TV to follow these instructions and then leaving to have a drunken alcohol-fueled party, violating all the rules. That got through to a lot of people at a very visceral level. And I think we're seeing some of the effects of that coming through in the crisis today. You know, all sorts of dishonesty and shenanigans from Johnson. But you know, who could be surprised? He has a whole history of dishonesty, of being fired from jobs, of being caught on television, sorry, of being caught in a phone call, plotting violence against a journalist whom one of his friends was angry at. But I think we do have to go a little bit deeper, because I think most of the Tory MPs are very worried about losing their seats. There are many crimes that they consider Johnson has committed, but they all come under one heading. They could lose their seats. And his only real crime for them is losing elections. And he's losing elections by an unprecedented margin, and they're worried about their seats. But it's not just that. I think we look at some of the key spokesmen for the Conservative Party, and you can see that they're very worried. They're using language against their own leader, which we've never heard before. And I think we have to look at not just losing seats, but the crises that are coming down the road for any government in London. Sure. Inflation, strikes, they're preparing for a long drawn out war, a proxy war against Russia. And they feel entering all these crises of a perfect storm that they need a leader whom they can rely on, whom they can trust, and somebody who will inspire confidence among the population.
Sure.
And Johnson can't do that. So I think taking those two things together, that goes a long way to explaining this soap opera.
We're going to get into some of those issues that you just talked about, really. But this is what Johnson has said so far in terms of the way that he has treated this, Shabir Rizvi, and he has said that he has a mandate from the 2019 election to press on. I'm not going to step down. And that's the last thing that this country needs, frankly, is an election. Is it the last thing the country needs, or is it what the country needs?
Sorry, is that for me?
Yes, for you, yes.
Okay, thank you. Look, insofar as elections are concerned, obviously, the Labour Party is jockeying to have an election as soon as possible. Whether that happens or not, because within the sort of parliamentary process that we have in UK, is that a leader can be removed and another leader from the same party can be installed, and he can continue until the next election, which is due perhaps just over 2 years from now. So that's an option that the Conservative Party may want to take. Because as our commentator earlier said, that the members of parliament, the 80 majority that the Conservative Party have, potentially a lot of them could lose their seats. So they may want to continue. Because as I said, the ethos of the Conservative Party is not ethics, honesty, and all the nice words that Mr. Sunak and Mr. Sajid Javid have used. The reality of the Conservative Party is it's a winning machine. It wants to be in power so that its friends in the city can benefit and the ordinary people become losers. That's the sort of ethos of the Conservative Party. So they will abandon any leader. As I have commented previously, that Margaret Thatcher, who won three elections for the Conservative Party over 30 years ago, she was knifed and she was removed while she was prime minister. And similar thing happened to Theresa May. Soon after that, Boris Johnson became the prime minister because she had a very thin majority to carry on after the election that she called. So the reality is that the Conservative Party may want to put a new face to it, but the tragedy is that in the UK, the Conservative Party has taken the garb of the the right-wing elements in society who are, in a way, very keen for Britain to stay out of the European Union. They're against immigration and the whole host of racist policies that right-wing parties had. And the Conservative Party has taken that on, which appeals to a significant section of the population in UK. Therefore, if there is an election tomorrow, potentially with a new head of the Conservative Party, the Conservative may potentially win election again because they're very good at winning elections. The Labour Party doesn't have a leader that can really resonate with the public at this moment. So I don't know whether Labour will win if there's an election, but the reality is that the Conservative Party is willing to abandon a leader as and when required, so long as they can continue to be in power.
Sure. Well, I don't know if this is important or not, but it is, in a sense, where we're looking at another, what are we looking at here? The UK Minister for Industry, Lee Rowley, and four other members of the government have resigned. I don't know if you were aware of that. So, Mick Knapp here. Let's go to the election, the 1922 Executive Committee. They're looking for the rules to change in terms of the vote of confidence, of which, as it stands, it cannot be challenged for another year, and it seems like they will be able to do that. So what direction will this now be taken in terms of how it will affect whether the vote of confidence is going to take place and in what period of time?
That's a very good question. I mean, it's quite useful to look at Boris Johnson as a kind of mini Donald Trump. But the problem for Johnson is that we don't, as our other guest has said, we don't have a presidential system. It's a parliamentary system. And the system now, I think, means that very shortly, Boris Johnson will go. He has a huge majority of his party against him or indifferent. His recently appointed chancellor has just come in the door and has turned on him, taken a knife out, a political knife out of his pocket, and told him that Johnson has to go, which brings Nadeem Zahawi very close to replacing him because he's currently the chancellor. So I think it's impossible for the government to proceed. I mean, how on earth? I mean, you've just mentioned there are an extra four people who've left. It is impossible for anybody to replace 40 odd ministers and junior ministers in the government. So I think the way ahead, just by Johnson insisting on going ahead, has been closed off. If he refuses to go following the meeting taking place now in number 10 Downing Street, then this 1922 committee has the power to force him to go, simply to vote, and his game is over. And I think that is what's
going to happen. Oh, it can do that.
It can do that, yes.
That they can vote for Johnson to be... force him to resign or take that position away from
absolutely. As soon as they call a vote of confidence and Johnson loses that vote, then he's gone.
Vote of confidence is called, when will that happen? I mean, they're going to vote on it to happen, but I mean, what length of time?
It could happen very quickly. It's within the gift of the 1922 committee to set the rules. They have, and it's not expected to be used very often, but in this critical situation, they will be trying to prevent a situation where Johnson creates a constitutional crisis. They can call a vote and then he loses the vote, and then he goes.
Very well. Okay. Let me bring in Shabir Rizvi here. Shabir Rizvi, let's get down to business here, because that is what is at stake. I mean, we're looking at the UK economy. We're looking at, obviously, the cost of living crisis, inflation, and the whole host of other challenges, to say the least, and economic crises that the UK is facing. Not that other European countries are not facing. I mean, you need to have a team to handle that. And these are the most extreme circumstances that we're looking at. Forget about the fact that you came out of COVID and you're trying to deal with that, which now you have, obviously, the Ukraine conflict compounding that. How can this happen? How can a team be formed, let alone a leader, to be elected, were Johnson to go, to handle all this?
Well, look, this is the sort of a crucial question that I think the majority of the Conservative members of Parliament are weighing up, that even if a new leader comes in, will he be able to manage all the crises that we are facing that you have quite eloquently listed? The reality is that we have a broken political system here in UK, it appears. And this is becoming very clear with many crises that are on the horizon, which are being faced by the ordinary people. People blame the economic crisis on what's happening with Ukraine and Russia. But the reality is that we've had austerity for the last 12 years, since the last financial crisis back in 2008-2009. That austerity measures which have been applied really by the Conservatives, they've been in power for the whole of that period. So they can't shy away and say that, you know, it's the Labour baggage that has inflicted pain on the society and on the economy. Okay. It's the Conservative policies.
Let me jump in. I'm sorry to get McNapier final answer here. If you can, under a minute, please, McNapier. To do the honourable thing, to put the interests of the nation before his own interests, is what the MPs are saying. Do you think that Prime Minister Johnson should resign?
Look, everybody, even his friends, know that honourable and Boris Johnson do not go together. The language that his Conservative Party members are using to describe him is very strong. He's a scoundrel. He's a rascal. He's a liar. And they voted for him because he gave them an 80-seat majority. He managed to sell Brexit and get a huge parliamentary majority.
Okay.
But now he's turned into a fantastic liability. And in terms of confronting the situation of real war, of real massive strikes by railway workers and health workers and teachers, he is not the man to lead the Tory
Party. Well.
I've
got to
jump
in, we're fresh out of time. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Went by so quick. Mick Napier, activist and commentator from Edinburgh. Thank you. And Shabir Rizvi, economic analyst from London. Good luck to you all, since you're all in the UK. Thank you so much for your input, both of you. That does it for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikawa Tahwe and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at supplication number 8. Found in As-Sahif al-Sajjadiyya for Al-Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn Zayn al-Abidin alayhi salamullah. The Imam asks Allah, and rather he seeks refuge in him from bad morals, wa shakasatul akhlaq. We said when it comes to akhlaq, sometimes according to Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, it could be sajiyya and could be niyya. Sajiyya means it was already embedded into a person, that it became a habit for him. Some people don't need to put a lot of effort into being nice. They are just generally nice. They were born nice. I mean, it's just like in their blood for some reason. And I was watching a series lately called The Shrink Next Door. Some of you might have seen that. Where the person is naturally nice. He just can't say no to people. He just can't harm people. He can't, you know, speak for himself. And obviously, he gets abused by his therapist and gets taken advantage of. So some people, it is sajiyya. It is within them. They don't have to put an effort. They don't have to fake it. They don't have to learn it. It is in them. And there are those which the Imam alayhi salam refers to as niyya. It means it begins with an intention in the mind and turns, that intention turns into an action. So now in the hadith, the Imam compares the two. Which one is better, the sajiyya or the niyya, the innate kind of thing, or is it the intention kind of action? Let us take a short break and then we will find out.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
A bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyya.